by this time next year, the Ohio political landscape will look a lot different, or at least it will include some new faces or new faces in new places. 9 Ohioans, maybe 10 now, have thrown their hat in the ring to be our next governor. And there are several potential ballot measures in the works. The General Assembly has plenty of business to attend to. We're going to look ahead to the policy and politics of 2018 with 3 members of the Ohio State House Media Corps. Today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
If you want to know what's going on in state government, you can get some pretty good information by reading or listening to this week's guest panel. State House reporters Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer, Andy Chow with Ohio Public Radio and TV, and Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch. They all trek north from the State House to join us in the studios for Town Hall Ohio. Guys, gals, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Joe.
Thanks for having us back. Jackie's back, but Andy and Daryl are rookies on this. So, Jackie, if you have to carry the load today, just jump right in there and bear all the weight, if you would. So, Daryl, I'm going to start with you. The big thing in the news these days, as a matter of fact, as we're taping, we may have learned some new information, but the gubernatorial primaries are coming up on May the 8th. So, just give us your general assessment of where things are now. Can you even remember all the names, I guess, is the first question.
Oh, that would be the key. That's why we have Jackie and Andy here to back me up. Yeah, as you mentioned, there are 9 declared candidates. Right now, one is kind of hovering in the wings. what's going on now is we're picking running mates, and we just got 3 of them yesterday. Bill O'Neill, who's a justice on the Ohio Supreme Court, picked his running mate, an elementary school principal from up in Lorain County. She's also a former East Cleveland City Council member. Today, Rich Cordray, this morning, actually the number of declared candidates went down because he got one to be his running mate, former Congresswoman Betty Sutton from up in the Akron area, in an event at an Akron restaurant. Then this afternoon, as you say, as we're taping this, Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor on the Republican side, the first 2 were Democrats, named Nathan Estruth. He's a former P&G Procter & Gamble executive down there in Cincinnati, and he's going to be her running mate. The one that's up in the air, of course, is former Cleveland mayor and congressman and former state senator Dennis Kucinich, who sent a letter to Fox News. He's a guest contributor there, or a contributor there, saying, you know, I'm going to run for governor. Fox News says, okay, once you declare next week, you know, you're no longer going to be with us. Since then, his spokesperson says, well, he's actually just thinking about it. So that's up in the air. So that's why the difference between, I guess it'd be between 8 and 9 now, Joe, with Congresswoman Sutton out of the race.
So Richard Cordray, Connie Pillich, Joe Schiavone, let me scratch Betty Sutton as we speak here, Nan Whaley, mayor of Dayton, Supreme Court member Bill O'Neill, and potentially Dennis Kucinich.
That's for the Dems.
For the Dems. And Andy, on the R side, it trimmed from original 4 down to 3.
Down to 3. So, yeah, you have Mike DeWine, who chose John Husted as his running mate. So you have those two running on the same ticket. And then you have Jim Renacci, current congressman, and Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, which Daryl said she just picked her running mate. So... And you know, if we really want to go down this rabbit hole, there is some conversation about Jim Renacci possibly switching over to a different race because Josh Mandel, the Republican running for U.S. Senate, who would then run against Sherrod Brown, Mandel has dropped out of that U.S. Senate race, and there's talk that maybe Renacci would be interested in jumping into that race instead.
I'm no political advisor, Jackie, but I know the parties in many cases would prefer to have one person. They don't have to spend any money on primaries. They can start gearing up for the general. So as you hear from leadership within both the Republican and Democratic parties, What are they saying out loud, and what do you think they're thinking about having this mess of candidates on both sides?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. They would prefer that this would not be a bloodbath of any sort going in, you know, a primary. If you have a primary that depletes a lot of your resources, then you're in an unfortunate position going into the general. So actually the party leaders on the Republicans and the Democrats have tried to maintain, you know, this public position of neutrality. I'm sure there's probably some maneuvering, you know, behind the scenes, but, you know, no one wants to be seen in the public as from a chairman or chairwoman's point of view anyway, be seen as kind of, you know, doing that maneuvering and being a puppet master, if you will. You know, we saw this in the 2016 campaign for president on the Democratic side. The party National Party was pretty squarely behind Hillary Clinton, and a lot of Democrats thought that they, you know, were doing that at the risk of the voter, you know, and basically throwing away the voter's choice in supporting one candidate over the other. So no one wants to, you know, be seen as that. They want to, you know, let the voters decide that looks great. But, you know, of course, that complicates things. And if you've got a crowded primary, then of course that, you know, you're spending money in the primary that couldn't be spent better in the general.
I will say this move with Cordray picking Sutton means that maybe two people who were considered at the top of the list, two front runners for the Democratic nominee, have now joined forces. And so with Cordray and Sutton, that brings a lot of money into one ticket as well. So now you have Schiavone, Pillich, and Whaley, and then O'Neill, who are just way behind as far as funding would probably go. And so I feel like as far as a knock 'em out, drag 'em out competition, I think that brawl might be dampened a little now that Sutton and Cordray are on the same ticket, especially because those two were kind of running as the same kind of person, somebody who has an Obama connection, a D.C. connection, yet an Ohio connection as well.
Yeah, and there's plenty of time to go for things to shake out. You know, right now in January, it looks like the May primary is so far away, but it's really not. And, you know, these candidates are going to, you know, have to file in February. They have to file their signatures and the running mate, and that's why we're hearing all this running mate talk this week. But even between now and then, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the field narrow a little bit.
Yeah, Joe, there's two things fascinating that's gone on now with this quick action with these three folks being named. One is that we sort of have the Obama ticket here. Rich Cordray was, of course, nominated by the president and finally confirmed by the Senate to be the first head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington. Betty Sutton, former congresswoman, former state legislator as well, had a more obscure post, but she also was a presidential appointee to head the St. Lawrence Seaway Corporation. Some folks may remember back in the recession, there was the thing called Cash for Clunkers. That was kind of Congresswoman Sutton's claim to fame. She was the main impetus behind that. So certainly we had the potential for a lot of that Obama support and money coming in that the other Democrats can't have, or, you know, are very unlikely to have. Rich Cordray announced for office, he played a tape of Obama lauding him with Obama's permission. Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, praised him up and down. So that's some, especially for a Democratic primary, that's some pretty heavyweight hitting. Now, what the other candidates are reasoning, of course, hey, we got so many candidates in the race. As Jackie said, the field will probably slim. But, you know, I could still win this thing if I get maybe 30% of the vote, even 35%. I can still sneak away with this, and, you know, I may not get the most, you know, majority of votes, but you don't need a majority. You just need the most in the field.
Let me throw out an observation, which is not very observant, but bears a little bit of discussion. There are an awful lot of women involved in this, either as the candidate or as a member, now lieutenant governor candidate. Any thoughts on, is it just the time that we're finally getting there?
Well, that's the thing. That was the other thing I was going to mention, is that now every ticket that it has announced has a woman either at the top of the ticket or is the running mate.
Except the one.
Except the DeWine-Husted ticket. And, of course, if Dennis Kucinich jumps in, obviously it's a little early for him to have picked a running mate. So, but all the rest who have declared, yes, we have the mixed-gender ticket.
I will say, I think because most of the women are on the Democratic side, I think that's just the nature of what their bench looked like at the time as well. You had Connie Pillich, who ran for treasurer a few years ago. So she's been rising through the ranks. You have Betty Sutton as a congresswoman, and Nan Whaley, who's been making a lot of waves as Dayton mayor. So it's just been these politicians who have been trying to gain strength through the grassroots to rise up, and they've been kind of just the strong contenders on the Democratic bench for a while now.
And if you talk to these women who are running, they don't feel that they're, you know, a token candidate of any sort, and that we have reached a point where they are just the candidate, not the woman candidate. And I think you're seeing that even on the Republican side with Mary Taylor as mm-hmm. well. Jim Renacci also chose a woman from Southwest Ohio, from Cincinnati area. So it's clearly, if they're not a woman candidate, they're seeing the strength of having a woman on their ticket as a positive.
So we've got a couple minutes before break. I was going to kind of walk through all of the other statewide offices, but let me just throw them out, and then you guys can jump in if there's anything of significance to say. And if I missed anybody here, but running for Attorney General, the Democrat is Stephen Dettelbach, Republican Dave Yost. Secretary of State, Democrat is Kathleen Clyde. Frank Rose, currently in the legislature, is the Republican running. For State Treasurer, Rob Richardson, the Democrat, and Robert Sprague, the Republican. And for Auditor, the Republican Keith Faber and the Democrat Zach Space. These still statewide offices, but never get the attention that the gubernatorial race does. Any thoughts on significance in those other four statewide races?
Well, I think the race for Secretary of State will be fun to watch. You have Kathleen Clyde and Frank LaRose, two people who have been in the State House for a long time working on voter issues on different sides of the aisle. So to see that kind of culminate into this big battle, this big race between the two of them will be interesting. I think Frank LaRose is actually pulling in a lot of money, so he'll have a big funding boost behind his campaign. But I think that'll be a fun race to watch.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, you know, with all the talk about voter suppression, and you know, today there's a voting rights case before mm-hmm. the U.S. Supreme Court, and was very controversial. So these are pretty big issues. The Attorney General's race has some interest as well. Steve Dettelbach is a former U.S. Attorney for Northern Ohio. Prosecuted a lot of high-profile cases, especially, you know, some corrupt Cleveland politicians, for instance. Dave Yost is fairly well-known, certainly in Central Ohio, at least, former Delaware County prosecutor. And, he's been state auditor for the past 8 years, two terms. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's happening with all these. You mentioned maybe new, same faces, but in new places. Mm-hmm. They've all hit term limits. All the Republicans have hit term limits. They've served their two terms. John Casey can't run again, and all the other folks moving down, moving over, moving across. That's what's happening.
Yeah, I would also put, I think, the Secretary of State and the Attorney General's races kind of at the top of what I'm watching. And I think the Attorney General's race will be interesting because although Yost has had two terms, I wonder outside of Central Ohio, what kind of pull his name has. And also, I think Dettelbach has the ability to fundraise a lot, where that's always a big challenge as a down ticket race, is where do you get your money? And a lot of times you get that from the party, and that's dependent on a good top ticket. So
well, we will be back to talk more about politics in the coming 6 to 8, 9 months here in Ohio. Our guest helping us see what's coming are Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio and TV, Jackie Borchard of Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. We'll be back right after this. Our guests today are three members of the Ohio Legislative Correspondents Association. That means they're reporters covering the State House. Jackie Borchard is with Cleveland.com. Andy Chow with Ohio Public Radio and TV. Daryl Rowland with the Columbus Dispatch. So, Jackie, the U.S. Senate race was already getting national attention because it was going to be great battle round two between Josh Mandel and Sherrod Brown. Mr. Mandel was forced to step out of the race.
Yeah, Josh Mandel, he he said he was not going to be running again. He had some health. His wife has some health problems that he felt he needed to stay at home and be there with his family. And that decision, I mean, it shocked the whole state, Republicans mm-hmm. and Democrats. No one really saw it coming. And of course, then the question is, well, who's going to run in his place? There already is another Republican running. There was a primary set up. Mike Gibbons, he's a Cleveland area businessman, and he's been, you know, out in the counties, getting his name out there, meeting with people, presenting himself as kind of a Trump-like outsider to this race, which, you know, Josh Mandel has been in public service for almost his whole career. Same with Sherrod Brown's been a politician for a long time. So he was kind of already positioning himself that way. You know, his name recognition is not great as far as fundraising. He's got a lot of his own money he can put in the race, but not nearly as much as someone like Josh Mandel was able to pull in from across the country. So that kind of has started some chatter about who might step into the race on the Republican side that might have more name recognition, have a better chance of beating Sherrod Brown in November.
And as Andy, as you pointed out, one of those names has currently got his hat in the ring to be governor.
Yeah, Jim Renacci. There's been a lot of talk about whether Jim Renacci might want to just jump into the Senate race instead. He's a congressman right now. He's being outraised by DeWine and Husted as far as the governor's race goes. So maybe it'd be a good idea for him to jump into the other race. But I think the thing is, I think if you're anybody who's considering running, taking the spot and running in the Senate, then you have to take on Sherrod Brown, who's a very popular politician here in Ohio. He has cross-party appeal. He appeals to small rural areas of Ohio and the urban areas of Ohio. And he's also a big fundraiser. So if you're going to jump into that race, you got to be ready for a fight and a high potential that you might lose. So I think that's what people have to consider before jumping in.
And that's why one of the other names that was thrown out is Governor John Kasich, who will be out of a job here at the end of the year. And you know, his aides have said that he's not interested. That's not a route that he's going to go. They have a quote, I think, bigger fish to fry was what his former campaign strategist said. So
Weaver.
I wonder what that could be, right? So, you know, and I think a lot of that goes to if John Kasich were to jump into the race, and he were to lose to Sherrod Brown, that would be a huge loss, especially if he is still aspiring to be president.
Yeah, that's not in his life plan to run
for
Senate.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say I don't think Mr. Kasich will run for the Senate. But you brought up John Kasich's name. Daryl, just a quick thought. Mr. Kasich does not say yes or no very plainly about what his future intentions are, yes or no to running for the president. Is that where he's headed?
Well, he says, I don't know. And actually, it's probably about as honest as these guys are at this point. He could. I mean, what he says, he still wants a national voice. But frankly, unless the Republican Party changes and changes significantly, he's gotten out of prayer of this existing Republican Party nationwide.
Third party candidate,
independent.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a very traditional Republican mm-hmm. now, and the Republican Party is not a traditional, not necessarily a safe haven for quote unquote traditional Republicans.
Yeah, I don't see him running as an independent third party. I mean, first of all, he has played a big role in kind of making it harder to run as a third party candidate in Ohio. So for him to then turn around and run as a third party candidate would be kind of interesting. And I also think that it's kind of goes against his brand to leave the Republican Party and run as an independent candidate, because I think what he wants to do is replenish and return the Republican Party to what he thinks it should be, and that's not where President Trump is right now.
Jack, go ahead, Daryl.
Well, Joe, I'm just going to say back to the Senate race, there are actually two other Republican candidates we haven't mentioned. Most people haven't heard of them is the reason. Melissa Atkinson, mm-hmm. Don Elijah Eckhart. And there is an intriguing possibility, which I didn't think was going to happen, but my colleague Randy Lodo got a call today. And J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly Elegy, we thought this was, and it still may be, just a, you know, okay, here's kind of the trendy name throw out. But Mitch McConnell has called him more than once, and they've had conversations. Hmm. J.D. has a, you know, fairly well, fairly young newborn. That's a bit redundant. As a newborn at home,
as opposed to
those old
newborns like you and me, Joe. You know? So yeah, and you know, his wife's got a kind of a grueling job with a federal judge. On the other hand, these opportunities come along so seldom. And you know, if the majority leader of the U.S. Senate calls you and says, you know, we'd really like you to consider this, and I presume that would come with some sweeteners, like, you know, we'll throw some millions behind your name, because they do want a strong candidate against Sherrod Brown. With the Senate, you know, just one seat
so
difference
close,
now.
Yeah.
Now, the Democrats have a tough row because they have many more incumbents up this year. So, but the Sherrod Brown seat is one the Republicans would love to have in a state that Trump carried.
Well, we're going to continue looking ahead to the political landscape throughout 2018. A couple ballot measures that may be on the agenda for us looking ahead to next November. We'll talk about those in a few moments with Jackie Borchert of Cleveland.com, Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio and TV, and Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch. We'll be back after this. Tell you, part of my duties besides hosting this radio show is I do media relations for Ohio Farm Bureau, and when Daryl Rowland or Jackie Borchert or Andy Chow call, I just quake in my boots because I know it's going to be a tough day.
It's hard-hitting journalism.
That's exactly right. Thank you all for being here. Those are the three folks who are reporters covering the State House and helping us look ahead to some of the things we should be paying attention to in 2018. Jackie, there's a race shaping up in the Ohio House. Cliff Rosenberger, the current Speaker of the House, he will be term limited out. Somebody's got to take his job. What's going on there?
Well, he's grooming Ryan Smith, who's a Republican lawmaker from Bidwell, so down south, and for that seat for quite some time. Ryan Smith is the chairman of the House Finance Committee. He's kind of been roped into a lot of the big initiatives that have come out while Rosenberger's been Speaker. So he's, you know, kind of presumed to be, you know, the next in line, so to speak. However, there are, you know, 99 members and a lot of ambition. And Larry Householder, who's a previous House Speaker, is back in the legislature. And he has been working to try and regain that seat, regain that post. And, you know, you can see that bear out in the fundraising numbers as kind of the how you can track that kind of thing. And they're both they're going around the state trying to make their case that they're, you know, going to be the best leader for the party in the House. And, of course, the House Speaker has quite a bit of power. They can decide what, you know, what bills come to the floor and when they come to the floor. And they're also, you know, kind of hurting the caucus in which way they go on a lot of big policy issues. So it's a very important post. And we'll see. A lot of this stuff, you know, it happens behind the scenes. And it's the caucus that's going to choose them ultimately. So.
Something that will not happen behind the scenes is a plan, or one of several plans, to change the way we set up our congressional districts in Ohio. Daryl, tell us what's happening there, both with lawmakers and guys with clipboards on front porches around Ohio.
There's two competing efforts, Joe, as you point out. One is the legislature. The legislature, of course, controls the process of drawing the congressional district boundaries. And of course, it's one of the truisms of politics. You know, you control the map drawing pen, you control very often how many of your representatives are elected in the fall. So that's very, very important. The legislature controls that process now. Republicans control the legislature, so they're in charge. But there's been a lot of interest, a lot of people pushing for, you know, we got to revamp this process. We just did the way we drew legislative districts a couple years ago. Let's do the big one now. Let's do congressional districts. The legislature has their proposal, and I'm going to let Jackie and Andy talk about that because they were at a hearing just within the past couple of hours for the update on that. The other one is a citizens group. There's an oddity here. The legislature, both will need to go on the ballot. Ohio voters are going to have to approve these because we're amending the Constitution. But the oddity is that the lawmaker's proposal can go on the ballot this spring in the May primary. The Citizens Group can't do that. They have to wait till the fall. So we could have competing ballot measures. We could have groups saying vote for A but not for B, or no, vote for B but not for A. And the fact there are, you know, elections 6 months apart, there's a lot of weird dynamics. But I defer to my colleagues on the what's going on now at the legislature.
So you could kind of break up the issue in two parts, because when we dealt with this a couple of years ago with state legislative districts, it was how to reform the process altogether. Seems like as far as what the legislature is about to consider, it was something that was introduced by Senator Matt Huffman, a Republican from Lima. And he we're talking about two things, process and then rules. So the process that he introduced is very similar to what we do for state legislative districts, where you would require two members of the minority party to also approve the map. And then if you can't get, and so that would, if it were to happen now, then it would be Democrats who would have to have some buy-in on the on the map. And if you can't get that, then you move to a four-year map rather than a 10-year map. But I think the big fight is right now, where the big debate is around the rules to make sure that they are fair districts, to make sure that they're fair and competitive districts. And that's where the Democrats do not agree with the Republicans right now as far as the plan goes. The Republicans, Matt Huffman says that he wants to create rules to not have a lot of split up counties and small counties, but then you can split up the big counties a little bit more. So there's a lot of fight going on as far as if this process creates competitive districts.
Jackie, 30 seconds here on what you're seeing.
Well, the big question with any of these proposals is, if you were to, you know, run the numbers through, what would you get on the other side? And critics of the Republicans' proposal today said you could still come up with just the same situation we have today, where you have way more districts for one party than they should have if you were to, you know, look at the state's total votes.
And one of the points that we often make within Farm Bureau on this whole subject is, if you do have competitive districts, you tend to have a more balanced government, because then that way you're able to have to have really competitive races in the primaries as well as in the general election, and it tends to work out better. That's our two cents in Farm Bureau's views. We'll be back to get the views of Jackie Borchert, Andy Chow, and Daryl Rowland of the Ohio Legislative Correspondents Association. We'll do that right after this. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we're covering the news with Jackie Borchert of Cleveland.com, Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio and TV, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, and specifically the news of what's going on at the State House and in state government. A couple of potential ballot measures that we're hearing about that might be coming, might not, but Jackie, maybe we'll start with you. A proposal. We haven't even gotten all the rules in place for medicinal marijuana, and now talk about recreational marijuana in Ohio.
Yeah, you know, we thought this was over in 2015, right?
But nah.
No. Yeah, well, actually, it is the same guys who are behind the 2015 initiative, Responsible Ohio is what they call themselves, Jimmy Gould and Ian James. And after they lost, they went on to apply for a cultivator license for medical marijuana for Ohio's new program, and they did not get one. They didn't score high enough, and a week or so later, they announced that they're going to come out with a recreational marijuana legalization proposal because, in their view, the state has screwed it up with the medical by having a very tightly controlled licensing situation where the Commerce Department, Pharmacy Board, where they are picking kind of the winners and losers of who gets these licenses. They say that's not fair. It should be fair market, should be open to anyone who's willing to open a business and meets the requirements. So that's what they said. They did not have an actual amendment language to show that they wanted to open up the discussion, take feedback from anybody who was interested, and they are planning, they said, at the end of January to unveil details.
We'll come back to potential ballot measures in a minute, but Daryl or Andy, I don't know if either of you guys are following this, but the process of implementing the existing medical marijuana legislation is slow. coming to a fruition, it's a potential patients should be able to access the product this year, right?
This year, I think it's in September. I mean, right. they had 2 years to really get this process going, and it looks like they're going to take the full 2 years to actually do it. You know, you had to have people apply to be cultivators, and you had to have people, you had to pick the people who were going to pick the cultivators, and then they had to start break ground and grow it. So it's just been a long process. It seems like from this point, people have broken ground. They are starting to cultivate the pot, and it looks like it's going to be ready in time, but it's been a long time coming. So it'll be interesting to see how it's implemented, since that was coming from a bill where they had to put a lot of things in place within 2 years.
Yeah, Daryl, the opinion I've heard expressed frequently is that in a lot of states where medicinal marijuana was approved, it was medicinal marijuana, wink, wink. But here in Ohio, they're trying to really get a good regulatory grasp on it.
Well, certainly in the rules, as Andy mentioned, I mean, there are very specified conditions that you must have medically. And then you need, it's not a prescription because doctors can't prescribe an illegal drug, but a recommendation then that you use, that you should use medical marijuana to ease one of those conditions. But, you know, we have litigation going on, and, you know, who can foresee that? We have complications from the Trump administration. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has given U.S. attorneys the authority to go after marijuana. Now, it appears that's more the recreational marijuana, but it does raise questions in states like Ohio. It appears for now the medicinal marijuana is safe, but it's just a little more uncertainty in a you know, I knew you'd get us back to an agricultural topic here, and the growing environment, right,
yes,
for all those marijuana farmers out there.
Yeah. The one other ballot measure that might be coming up, Jackie, home rule authority. Describe for our listeners what that's about.
Well, I think there's a couple. I think this group that's behind this is behind a couple different proposals. I don't know if the home rule one is the one that they're pushing more than the other. But what they're basically trying to do is reassert, you know, local government's ability to set their own laws in, you know, regards to how they serve their people. There's been several moves in the last couple of years by the state legislature to kind of chip away at some of that home rule power that's in the Constitution. Some of the things have been challenged. Like last in December 2016, there was a bill passed that said that cities couldn't set their own minimum wages, for example, in conflict with the state. They also couldn't prevent cell companies from putting this what's called microcell equipment on street signs and other public structures. And those are being challenged now by the cities. The cities are fighting back, and they're saying, you know, that's a little bit of an overreach here. So there are efforts, and they're citizen-backed. I don't know what kind of, you know, money is behind them, but there are efforts by a handful of citizen groups across the state to kind of give them even more power over, you know, what the state legislators are deciding.
So real quick, we got 30 seconds. If folks want to follow up on what's going on in politics, the website for the Columbus Dispatch, Daryl?
Dispatch.com.
That's pretty simple. Jackie, how about you folks?
Cleveland.com.
Cleveland.com.
That's it. From Cleveland.com at Cleveland.com.
That's what I was getting ready to ask. Why did I say that? Andy, give me something a little more complicated.
Well, we're at statenews.com. Statenews.org. I'm sorry. Statenews.org. We're public radio.
All right. Well, we'll talk with all of these folks who know a lot about what's going on in Ohio government when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
We need a good reporter for the 6 o'clock news. We need a good reporter who's gonna get us the truth.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We're looking at Statehouse news with reporters who spend their days covering it. Daryl Rowland with the Columbus Dispatch, Jackie Borcher with Cleveland.com, Andy Chow, Ohio Public Radio and TV. Daryl, a couple of years ago, the governor, in a somewhat controversial move, expanded Medicaid coverage so that more Ohioans would fall under the program. The legislature then wasn't sure they liked it. They're not sure they like it now and are considering doing some things.
That's right. Just to review, the Medicaid expansion took effect. Again, Medicaid is the program that's funded by the federal and state government combined. The expansion has been 100% federally funded until just recently, and then the state just pays a few pennies on the dollar. The Medicaid expansion has added a little over 700,000 Ohioans to medical coverage. They've gotten health care coverage now. Governor Kasich and its advocates say that's a good thing for Ohio. There's people getting health care that didn't before. Instead of going to the emergency room for regular medical care, they're actually seeing doctors and things of that nature. And with the system of grants that they've set up and fees, they claim it's not only cost efficient, that right now it's actually making the state a little bit of money. Critics say that may be true for now, but again, you look at the big picture, government money, you know, the feds are paying this big share, but long term or even medium term, this is not really fiscally sustainable. So we need to do something about that. The legislature wanted to freeze expansion after the middle of this year. Governor Kasich vetoed that. The legislature still is pending on whether to override that or not. That's a little thing they're holding over the Kasich administration. They claim they have the votes to do so. They want the Kasich people to work with them on this whole topic. So it's kind of this, you know, it's kind of messy right now.
And it's not quite an empty threat because, remember, the House and Senate did override other vetoes last year. So they do have the votes. They do have enough members who are willing to go against the governor. So it seems like they could do it if they really wanted to.
Another item, Jackie, that we visited, I think, a couple of times in the past and may need to revisit is the regulations for payday lenders here in Ohio.
Right. You know, again, another issue we thought was settled, right, a couple of years ago, back in about 10 years ago now. You know, Ohio passed a law that was supposed to cap the interest rates for payday loan lenders. And what happened is all the payday loan lenders decided to register under a different law, under a different type of loan. So they're still able to operate, still able to charge pretty high interest rates comparatively. And Ohio is among one of the worst states in the country for this, according to the Pew Charitable Trust, who's really advocating for some change on this issue because, you know, people who take out payday loans are typically lower income. They're already living paycheck to paycheck and, you know, they miss a loan payment and it just snowballs. And then they're in a whole lot of debt.
So do we think the legislature actually will get something done?
I don't know. I think it's a really thorny political issue right now. We do have bipartisan legislation that's been introduced. A year ago was introduced. Mm-hmm. And so there is bipartisan support for it. I think they're trying to, like on so many things, kind of work out the details behind the scenes before they unveil something. So hopefully soon we'll know whether it is or isn't going to happen.
Yeah, the bill sat in committee for a long time and just started to see some movement at the end of last year, and the speaker was talking about it more. So it might have some more momentum going into this year.
So, Andy, just we got about not even quite a minute here. School report cards. We have the system in place that's supposed to tell parents and other members of the community how well our schools are performing. They're looking at changing the metrics for that.
Well, the school report cards are supposed to come out soon, and there's a lot of people who aren't happy because they say it's too confusing. It doesn't really give a good reflection of what a school district is really doing and if it's actually performing well. So there are people who still want to go back and change it. But we need to, the law says that we need to have some sort of way of telling schools how they're doing. So if the legislature wants to do something about it, they better get on it soon because we still need report cards of some type.
Well, thank you guys for coming in, and hopefully we've treated you well enough. You'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
Well, if you promise to keep that same playlist, love the music.
Yep.
Well, good. We'll work. Actually, we try to change that up a little bit, but we've got a few other tricks up our sleeve here that we can go to. My thanks to Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, Andy Chow, Ohio Public Radio and TV. If you want to know what's going on in state government, these are three folks to follow online or on the air or on print. Thanks to all of you for joining us today on Town Hall, Ohio.
Town Hall, Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.